What's up, everybody? It's Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you're tuned into Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for listening in again. Already past 30 episodes. This is episode 31. It's so crazy. In recent podcast news, I ended up redesigning the logo, the Kinda Neat logo. The first one was always just kind of a place marker with the shitty like TV background, and I had called upon you guys to try and do some design work, and I appreciate all the submissions. I probably got like 10 or 15 submissions, and they were all awesome. And then what I learned from that process is that I'm pretty much just a fucking complete weirdo control freak, and I ended up just doing it myself one night while I was sitting at home bored. And so yeah, there's a new Kinda Neat logo, and I'm pretty stoked on it, but I'm biased because I did it. So also in podcast news, we created a Facebook page. I don't know why I never got around to doing it before. I kind of felt like maybe I would wait until I knew it was really, really a thing to make a Facebook page. But yeah, now at facebook.com/kindaneat, you guys can go and like the Facebook page, and I'll be posting up pictures of what we do here and shenanigans. And really, I'll just be kind of treating it the same way that I do the Twitter and just posting about whatever new content we put out. This week, we have in a young man, a young gentleman named Toy Light. His name's Walker, but his nom de plume as an artist is Toy Light. And he makes some really fucking interesting music. He uses a lot of found noise. So he's out there just recording stuff that he hears around the house or hears around his art studio or what have you, and flips it and twists it into these like lush soundscapes. And it's kind of Radiohead-ish. He's a vocalist as well. So he produces the background music, but also he's singing on it. And I don't know, I like it. Shout out to my friend Colin, who goes by Versus. He's the one who pointed me out to him. So yeah, if you guys have artists that you like and you think that I might like, please feel free to hit me up and tell me about them, because I do try to check out as much as I can. Every once in a while, about probably 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 15 artists that I like check out, I'm like, oh yeah, this is good, and I think this would fit the format. And so yeah, shout out to Versus. You guys may or may not know him. He's a good youngster as well. Before we go any farther, fuck yeah, my name's Lee Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery, at I Am Database, base with two S's. Follow us both on Instagram under the same names. We're out there slanging them filters. You know. Follow us as a unit on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat. Did I just make you laugh, Ben? What are you laughing? What? Oh, he was yawning. He's not laughing. What a fucking asshole. You can follow us on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat. You can find us on YouTube, youtube.com/That's Kinda Neat. And everything's wrapped up in a pretty package under kindaneat.net. And please, if you have Facebook, which all of you probably do, take 5 seconds to go ahead and like our new Facebook page at facebook.com/Kinda Neat. Subscribe to us on iTunes. That is the most important and awesome thing you can do, is just subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave a 5-star rating. Comment on there. I go and read the comments about once a week. So like, just leave a comment. Tell me about like what you like or dislike. The stuff that you dislike, I'm just going to say fuck you in my head and not pay attention. And the stuff that you like, I'm going to go, hey, oh, cool, they like me, they really like me. And also, you should suggest artists that you want to hear on the show, because that's very important to us. Like I just said, a lot of the stuff that ends up on here is just suggestions that are made to me. I reached out to you guys on my personal Facebook page about if you have any advice that you want or any questions that you would like answered, please reach out and feel free. And the night that I did that, I got like maybe 30 or 35 responses to my request, and they were interesting. There were some crazy questions. One guy asked me, like, where would I put a taco truck if I was starting a taco truck in Los Angeles? And I'm like, dude, I have no idea. That's a really crazy question. And he's like, yeah, no, I live in Minnesota. I don't really fucking... he's like, I just wanted you to ask a question nobody else would ask. And I'm like, oh, congratulations, you did. But I got a bunch, and so I'll be answering them over upcoming weeks. And this is the first one that I wanted to answer that kind of struck a chord with me. I'm by no means an expert in this subject, but I just wanted to kind of reach out to a young fan and, you know, see if maybe I had some good words for him. So this guy says, hey man, I just wanted to ask if you've got any advice on social anxiety or bipolar disorder. I'm not suffering from it. I mean, like officially, in the way that I haven't talked to anybody about it, but I find myself down and alone a lot of the time by myself on other occasions. I can be pretty funny and a lot of people seem to like that side of me, but I feel like it's all just superficial and just not really me. It's like I'm acting in a role or something when I'm in school or with friends, and I just can't relate to most of the stuff they're talking about. So I end up rejecting all their invitations to parties and stuff most of the time, and just end up being alone by myself, listening to music or watching movies, etc. Sorry for my English. I thought your English was pretty good. I don't know if that was just like you're talking about your grammar, if your English is a second language, but I thought your English was pretty good. So, social anxiety and bipolar disorder. Now, first and foremost, I want to say I'm not a psychological expert on bipolar disorder, but I have read some books because I used to date and live with a girl who had some bipolar stuff in her family. And so I read up about it. And I think that our generation or kids like, you know, millennials, they confuse bipolar disorder with just being really happy sometimes and really sad on other times. But I think that's just kind of life. Bipolar disorder is actually closer to schizophrenia and misdiagnosed as schizophrenia, or schizophrenia is often misdiagnosed as bipolar or vice versa. Because with bipolar disorder, like oftentimes you do, you know, hallucinate or have paranoia, and it's a lot more serious than just like, oh, today I'm really happy and tomorrow I'm really sad. And social anxiety, I'm not that familiar with. I'm a pretty outgoing person, but I can touch on the fact that like I have suffered from depression for most of my life. There was a point in my life where I used to go to a shrink for a while back in my early 20s, and she told me this catchphrase, dystemic depression, dystemia. It's basically like when you've been depressed for so long, or you started being depressed so early on that it just feels normal. And so like you basically learn to cope with your depression on your own. And so I've never taken like meds for depression. Like she wanted to put me on them or said I was a good candidate. And I'm like, I'm not really down because I like don't want to just be neutral. I'm down with I'm okay with the ups and downs basically. So what I will say is that while I don't have social anxiety, like I don't get nervous talking to people, I don't have a problem speaking with strangers or anything like that. Oftentimes my depression does keep me from wanting to go out, and I get a little hermitic. Like I just become a hermit and I just stay in my apartment. And there are times when I don't want to leave my apartment for a few days. And so the way that I've treated that is kind of to force myself to leave. And I found that just kind of trying to stay positive and leading with yes when opportunities arise, in that you mentioned in your question, like, oh, when people invite me out, I often don't feel like it because I'm so nervous, right? So here's the thing, is that if I get invited out and I'm going through a phase, a bit of like a downer phase, my first instinct is to go, nah, I don't want to go out. I just want to sit home and perhaps watch House of Cards tonight or something. I find that it's better to go against my initial judgment and lead with yes and go, you know what? Yeah, you're inviting me out. I should go out. Because when you force yourself to face what you're going through, oftentimes you can work through it. So I feel like my best advice to you is that when you feel your social anxiety really bubbling up in your stomach and somebody invites you to a fucking, I don't know, like a makeout party. Yeah, I would assume that you must be in high school or something when you're talking about you feel nervous in school and, you know, you get nervous at parties and stuff. So what I'm saying is when you get invited out, force yourself to go. Force yourself to face your fears and your anxieties head on. And I think that positive things will come from that. And I think perhaps it would help you get over it. Now, like I said, you have to take my advice with a grain of salt. If that shit doesn't work and you have terrible social anxiety still, perhaps medications are the route. It probably is a chemical imbalance. I think like, I don't know if it's Xanax or something is an anxiety drug. Perhaps, you know, speaking to somebody who is a professional, they would be able to like point you in the right direction and get you on meds that might balance you out. That's not the path for me. But if it is a crippling social anxiety where you find yourself not ever able to be out and find it affecting your work at school, affecting your social standings, affecting how you interact with people, then perhaps that is something that you would want to look into. So with that being said, hopefully that was a little bit of help, and hopefully like I don't sound like a complete emo fucking turd now about like, oh, I'm so depressed, because I'm not really that depressed. I manage it and I use it. I'm the type of depressed person that uses their depression to drive them. So when I feel like a piece of shit and I don't feel good, my depression turns into a bit of anxiety, and the anxiety makes me go, yo, you should be doing something. And then I get busy and then I feel better. So that's another piece of advice, is like, yo, if whatever is a negative in your life, try to turn it into a positive to motivate yourself. So if your anxiety is, if you feel like it's holding you back at first, confront it head on and use it to motivate you and say, man, this makes me feel like shit, so I want to beat this, you know? So yeah, man, I hope that you work through it. Like I said, if all else fails, see a professional, because I'm certainly not. And now, without further ado, we're going to get into this young gentleman named Toy Light. He's going to be playing at Low End Theory on October 2nd. So if you're in the area, you guys can catch him live. I think he's got a cool thing going on. He's a very calm dude, very sage-like, seems wise beyond his years, very artsy-fartsy. I think the girls are going to go crazy for him. And so here it is. This is my interview with Toy Light. What's up, dude? Hi. Nice to meet you.
Yo, yo, you too.
Yeah, I've never met you before. My friend Versus put me onto your music, and I started checking out all your SoundCloud stuff, and I always like it when friends put me onto things, because then it's, like, easier to learn about music.
Yeah, likewise, man.
Yeah.
Versus was one of the first people who heard my stuff when I was just starting out, and he's...
When did you just start out?
That stuff was when... That was the first stuff I started, like, sharing online and that.
The stuff on your SoundCloud?
Before that, I had Bandcamp. I just made, like, 10 songs. Like, I called it Lighten Up because I was learning how to record and stuff. And I don't share that stuff with anyone anymore because it sounds like crap to me. But
right. I always say that's a sign of artistic growth. When you hate your last project, that means that you're getting better, you know?
Yeah, I can say that with a lot of my stuff.
Yeah, which is good. So, yeah, you go by Toy Light.
Uh-huh.
Walker is your name.
Right.
Well, how long have you been making music? How long ago did that start?
Been making music forever, really. I think, you know, I was singing when I was like a toddler, just like singing like, you know, Disney Channel soundtracks and stuff like that. And then I started like being a musician, started picking up guitar at 11, then played in bands through high school. And then when I got to college, that's when I started to record on my own. And
what kind of bands were you in?
The first band I was in, it was just this one kid who was on my baseball team and I. Who played drums, and you know, we just had similar tastes, and he said, go get a guitar, man, like just do it. And I was like, all right. So I begged my parents, they copped one for me for Christmas. And
electric or acoustic?
Electric.
Nice.
And my dad was like, oh, we gotta get him an acoustic guitar, you know, that's the best way to start.
And you're like, fuck that, I wanna rock out, dude.
Yeah, it was no question.
Yeah, give me some distortion and shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was funny. It took me like a year to figure out how to just like press the distort button on the thing.
Yeah.
So I'd play guitar like clean, like, and try and make it sound gritty.
Right.
Because I was just so clueless. But, you know, it just started really early like that.
Yeah. Well, you said at 11 you got a guitar?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tight. That's early. So you had a friend that was like playing drums already at 11 too.
He was so raw, dude.
It's crazy because now if it would have been the internet days, you guys would have blown up at age 11 as like, oh, look at this cute little YouTube actor, rock and roll band. That's so cute.
Yeah.
Did you stick with baseball?
Oh, man. I stopped playing right when high school hit.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't spend any more time like outside in the sun doing this, running around.
Yeah. Just over the sports.
Well, yeah, just over the sports and over all the people and stuff.
Where are you from?
I'm from the Bay Area originally.
What part of the Bay?
I was born and raised in San Fran, in Bernal Heights, if you know where that is.
I don't.
It's right above the Mission.
Okay.
Back in 92 when I was born, it was a pretty dicey neighborhood, you know. But recently it's really nice now.
Damn, 92, so you're mad young then.
Yeah.
So when you say, oh, I got a guitar when I was 11, it was like 6 years ago.
Almost.
Yeah. So what's it like growing up in San Francisco in 1992 when Full House was at its peak when you were born probably? And now that house people go to visit and you have no idea what it is because you've never seen a Full House because you're too young.
No.
Oh,
no idea.
That's what the Olsen twins got famous for, man.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Full House, right. Bro. You got to fucking look it up. It's an amazing TGI Friday Americana sitcom. But anyhow, so you're growing up in San Francisco in the 90s and you say it's a dicey neighborhood house. So how did you know that?
Well, that's just what my parents said.
Yeah.
They got me out of there when I was started going to school and stuff.
Yeah.
My parents were hardcore biologists, molecular biologists.
Oh, and wow.
It took them a little while to like make their own career out of that. You know, being a scientist, you have to kind of study with certain professors, you know, go with whatever institution will help you.
So they're just like in academia.
They were. Yeah. They both have PhDs now and they run their own company and they're doing great.
Oh, tight. So what does their company do?
They research soil and like, you know, really just microbes in the environment, unsuspecting places. They're both really smart. It's like, you know, when I was growing up, they were always so jacked up on science and stuff like that. And that was cool. But once they got like started making good money, we moved out of there, out of the kind of shitty neighborhood. And
where did you guys head?
We went to Marin.
Oh, okay.
If you know where that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really nice.
Yeah.
So I went to high school there and everything.
You're probably like the third or fourth person from Marin that we've had on here.
Oh, really? Yes.
Well, because, yeah, Spit was, and then Brick Stowell was from Marin as well. How'd your folks meet? At like, where did they go, Stanford or something?
They met at UCLA.
UCLA.
Yeah. And that's where I go now.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
It's a family tradition. Are you studying molecular biology?
Hell no.
What are you studying?
Studying art.
Oh, that's going to be super useful.
That's what they said.
Take it from me. My bachelor's in commercial photography is super useful. No, I'm kidding. It's not. But no, that's good. You get to play and study art. What are you focusing on in your art career?
Music.
Why not have gone to like Thornton or something?
I mean, UCLA was by far the best school I got into. And, you know, in high school, I was an artist mostly. I mean, I played in bands and stuff, but I was a photo kid.
Oh, yeah.
I was always running around
shooting. With the camera.
Yeah. I was super into, like, the analog, you know, black and white.
So you guys had a photo processing lab in the high school and shit?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's tight.
We had it all, dude.
They're, like, shutting all of those down.
It's so lame.
Yeah. I went to Brooks Institute of Photography in Santa Barbara. Are you familiar with it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I went there, and when I went, yeah, you had to have a film camera in the first like year is all just black and white before you need to shoot color, and it was all processing and stuff. And now they don't even teach kids how to process film anymore.
Yeah,
it's
dude.
Like you have to come in with a digital camera because it's just that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's dope that you got to learn how to process.
Dude, it was it changed everything for me. It was a way to get my hands on something creative.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's about imagery, you know, and there's a It runs in the family too, really.
I was going to say it's also the most like kind of mathematical and scientific art.
Absolutely.
Because processing is a lot of chemical formulas, and it's a lot of like mixing the proper amounts of this and that and timing and math and fractions.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
Maybe that came easy to you because your parents are scientists.
That part did.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was really into shooting like 4x5 with a tripod.
Yeah, for sure.
Large format. And my uncle's went to Art Center.
Mm-hmm.
And
Pasadena.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he's a fashion photographer now. I
doubt.
Yeah, man. So photography was my shit. And then that's how I got to school. You know, when I got to UCLA, it was my entire portfolio, pretty much the entire basis for my acceptance was photography.
Nice. So, what kind of stuff do you shoot?
Well, I did shoot like, in the beginning it was, you know, nature and stuff like that. But then I started like being more technical and getting into night photography and, you know, light and stuff like that. And
star trails and stuff. Or
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a lot of my portfolio kind of, and then shooting girlfriends and stuff like that. That wasn't the strongest stuff.
But I mean, it's an excuse to get girls naked.
Yeah, let's be real. Exactly.
Yeah. I was never good at photographing girls naked because it was kind of one of those things where I'm like, a girl gets naked in front of a camera and all of a sudden you forget everything except that there's a naked girl in front of your camera. You're like, oh yeah, that looks good. She's like fucking twisted up and looking like horrible facial expressions, but all you can see is her tits, you know?
It's like,
so it's like my nude photography skills were never up to snuff.
Yeah, same, man. I took the photo thing for a little while and I even got flown out to work at Fashion Week in New York and shoot the runway stuff and do lookbooks. And I also part-time just like assist a photographer here in LA.
Oh, what's his name?
His name is Jonathan Leonard. His work is mostly based in India. He's a commercial director.
Awesome.
He's seen like, you know, L'Oreal commercials, all the stuff that just looks so over the top, you know, like beautiful.
Yeah.
He's really well off and I assist him with that. Sometimes he takes me to Vegas and we get nasty and stuff.
That's dope.
The photo stuff was cool, but it wasn't everything.
Right. So what is it now? It's not photo
anymore. Music,
man.
Just music.
So the art and music degrees can tie into each other at UCLA? Or do they have a music department there?
Oh, man, they're so bunk about letting me do anything musical, trying to get like a degree or a minor or something. I didn't get into the music school. Therefore, if I wanted to, I'd have to reapply. And I never wanted to do music school. I wanted to do art school because I think my favorite music comes naturally. Well, yeah. And then my favorite music is very much artistic, you know?
Yeah.
So basically now I just call myself a sculpture major.
Okay.
I like, you know, build songs out of parts and
okay.
It's not so much traditional instruments like I would learn in music school. I'm sitting there in the sculpture lab, like with my recorder, you know, banging on shit.
Okay.
So
you use a lot of found noise and stuff like that?
Almost all of it, yeah.
Found sounds? No shit. That's tight. Do you actually sculpt as well? Like, like, can you make me a bong?
I could make a bong, yeah. I could make a dope bong.
Tight. I don't actually smoke weed, but that's just the first thing that – you maybe make me an ashtray. Well, people have always asked me, like, oh, why did you go into photo school? Like, you do music. Why didn't you go to music school? And I always kind of say, well, like, music was something that I was passionate enough about to teach myself. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I didn't need the school. Like, would you say that, like, are you in agreeance with that?
Most definitely.
Yeah. And I've talked about this before on the podcast, I think, where, like, I don't know if I'll ever, like, force my kids to go to college if I have kids. Because, mm-hmm. like, I think if you care enough about something, you're just going to open a book and teach yourself, right?
Exactly, man. That's how I did everything.
So you're 100% self-taught.
Yeah, man. My parents are scientists. You know, when I remember the day that they, you know, they sat me down and they were like, so you're going to school for photo and, like, you know, what are you going to do after that? You're going to get a job being a photographer? And I was like, no. And they were like, what? I said, I'm going to go down there and I'm going to study and I'm going to be a musician.
Yeah.
And they were like, you can't just, like, try to do that, you know? Like, you know how many people try and do that? And I was like, I don't know how many people try and do that, but it's just what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And then when I said, like, I'm just going to do that, they said, you know, then they were like, all right.
Word.
I feel like parents just need that, like, you know, they need to know that their child is motivated.
Yeah, I kind of had that same talk with my folks and they still aren't very convinced. 10 years later, they're not that convinced. But yeah, it's a long road ahead of you and fuck, man. To be 20 years old again and, like, fucking excited about shit would be really tight. you think you'll end up using your art degree to help your visual aesthetic?
Hell yeah,
I feel like that's the best thing that has come from my photo degree after I found out that, like, actually shooting photos was not probably my main passion anymore, was that it was able to help me develop a personal brand. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Do. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you been figuring that out and tinkering with your personal brand as time goes along?
I have. It's kind of evolved from photography though.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much right when I got to college, inconveniently, I fell out of love with photography.
Yeah. That's what happens.
So
you get burnt out on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just didn't like having a camera and, you know, just, it wasn't the camera. It was just like, I just want to live my life. But then I just started getting into, like, printmaking and kind of what it's very similar to photography in the process. You know, there's various steps that require precise calculations and time. And
like screen printing, right?
Like etching.
Oh, okay.
Like really archaic process of, you know, scratching onto like a copper plate. You know, it's a very physical kind of raw thing that's very, you know, extinct. But there's a printmaking class that I take and it's so, so sick.
Tight.
So I think that the visual kind of component to my music and what I do, how I spend my time, it comes out, I like it to come out in as many ways as I can, but lately it's been anything I can kind of like have a bodily reaction with.
You know? Right. Something you can really get your hands into and be physical. Because mm-hmm. the camera is a lot of machinery doing it for you almost.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. For your age, you seem very calm and sage-like. What were you like as a child? Were you like a young prodigy or something? Did you learn how to read when you were like 2 or something?
I don't think so.
No?
I had a speech problem when I was a little kid.
Oh, tell me about that.
I was in like 3rd or 4th grade and I never understood it until like years later, but I realized that I would be in, you know, elementary class with all my peers, and then around like, you know, 1 o'clock every day after lunch, I would go into a separate room with like 3 other kids from school.
Right.
And like read like picture books and stuff. And I was like, this is awesome, man. I love this class.
Yeah.
And
but it was like remedial fucking reading for.
Yeah, because it was because I guess I couldn't read and talk at the same time. I had a problem doing that. I stuttered a lot when I was little.
Yeah.
People called me, I remember my daycare director when I lived in San Francisco called me Dunaman
Oh, because you
all the time.
What an asshole.
He was crazy, dude.
You're not allowed to say that to children? That's crazy.
Man, that guy, never forget him. I'm still kind of close with him. But
oh, crazy. I don't know. After I saw like All the King's Men or whatever it was, or the King's Speech, I guess, where he was like, oh, you know, were you born left-handed and then forced to be right-handed? Have you heard that? A lot of people that have stutters, they're born left-handed and then they're forced to be right-handed, which is crazy because then you're trying to think with the opposite side of your brain all the time, which makes you fucking stutter.
Yeah, dude, that's trippy.
Yeah.
I think what it is for me, mm-hmm. it's not the hands. Yeah. It's my stance when I skate or surf. You know, I'm goofy footed, so right foot forward.
Yeah, I'm regular footed and everything.
And you're right handed?
But I'm left handed.
Oh, so you're like me.
I'm left handed but right footed.
Okay.
Right?
Left handed, right footed. So you ride regular.
I ride regular.
I think that's normal.
I kick a soccer ball with my right foot and like
same.
Yeah. But I'm left handed. Yeah. Are you left handed?
No. Oh, right handed.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So that, you know, there's some mix up there, I think. I do feel like, you know, along my adolescence, there was kind of an awkward thing in how I, you know, the way I skated. You know, skating and surfing and stuff were a big deal in high school, right? So
you grew up skating and surfing?
Skating more.
Yeah. What age did you pick up a skateboard?
As early as I could, probably before guitar.
No shit.
Yeah.
Like you were super into it. Did you get good?
I think I got 4 kick flips in my life.
Oh, so not that good.
Not that good. They're pretty bad.
So you would use it for just transportation more or less.
Yeah, there was that phase. I mean, I did want to get really good.
Yeah.
So I practiced a lot and I'm like fairly, you know, agile on my skateboard. You know, I used to skate through San Fran all the time and, you know, like San Francisco is really sketchy and hilly. And
fuck yeah.
It's crazy. You know, you gotta at least.
Riding a bike there seems a hella sketch.
Dude.
Yeah.
Driving there is crazy.
Yeah, I believe it.
But
so like when you were in high school, like you weren't a skater kid per se.
I was.
You were?
Definitely. Yeah.
But did the other skater kids, did they make fun of you? Like, yo man, you don't got your fucking laser flips down?
Yeah,
cause?
Dude. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was the kind of artsy dude with the camera at the same time.
Oh, yeah. You know, similarly, I grew up in Alaska. I don't know if you know that.
Oh,
but
really?
Yeah, I say that all the time. I'm sorry for the listeners that I keep beating that pounded in their heads. But so I grew up there and there wasn't much of a skate season up there because the summer is only a few months and I was busy playing baseball at those times and soccer and shit. So I had the like skate bug in me. So I snowboarded because that was like the equivalent. So like rather than being a skater kid up there, it's like easier to be a snowboarder kid. And I really loved it. And I like for a while I was like, oh, I want to get really good at this and go pro or something. But then I realized like, oh, wait, some of my friends are way better at this than me. Yeah. So maybe I should get a camera and start shooting them. Yeah. And that was like what initially drew my interest into photography. When I was like 14, I was like, oh, I want to shoot my friends that are like doing backflips and shit.
Same, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with surfing too, you said you surfed?
Surfing. Yeah. Surfing in NorCal is different.
Yeah, I could imagine
really rugged.
Full suits, booties,
sharks, and rocks, and everything you don't like.
Yeah, were you pretty decent at surfing?
I wouldn't, you know, hardly say decent. I would say that I went as much as I could, but the experiences I had definitely defined a certain, you know, certain part of me.
It takes a lot of heart to surf. It
takes a lot of courage, dude.
People don't realize that.
It's fucking so scary.
Dude, surfing, I feel like people don't realize because in movies it's so glorified and stuff, but like surfing is fucking pretty frightening. Like there's the ocean has all sorts of things underneath that you can't see.
Yeah.
Even beyond wildlife, there's rocks and shit. It's crazy. Yeah. And I feel like people, particularly that don't live in California, they think that standing up is the hard part and that's like the easy part. Yeah. The hard part is paddling out against a fucking set and like getting knocked back to the shore every time a wave hits you. Like,
yeah,
it takes a lot of heart.
Man, it's the ultimate challenge.
Yeah.
You know, it challenges your comfort and people don't show the side of surfing where it's just waiting, you know?
Yeah,
there's a
patience.
Lot of waiting around.
It's really just you against the ocean. Yeah. It's you against the world, pretty literally.
It's, yeah, dude. Yeah. It's, you know, I've had like, I've wiped out like really, really hard and like, you know, thought that was it.
Yeah.
You know, when I was like, got smacked at the bottom of the floor of the ocean floor and then like coming up and then just getting smacked again, you know, and then just being completely out of breath, you know, like fighting for my life and just things like that. You know, I was okay, but, you know, it's definitely changes you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Were you guys wearing like full like hoods and everything on your wetsuits? Is it that cold?
A lot of people did. Yeah. I was, you know, I try to keep it a little stylish, go without boots. No, nothing on the head.
Yeah.
I try to keep it basic.
Word. After learning how to read and talk at the same yeah. time in third grade.
Oh, man.
How were you as a student? Diligent student? Were the parents strict about it?
I think I was very much like a spacer, you know. I played like sports with all my friends and stuff like that. But beneath that, you know, when I was home alone all the time, then it's not like I was like Mr. Cool Guy hanging out outside with all my friends. It was like I'd go to practice and then I'd go home.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd, you know, early on it was like video games and stuff like that. But that wasn't everything. The earliest stage was, you know, me and just like all my little toys and stuff.
Yeah. So, is that where the name comes from or what?
In a way. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What you and I have a generational gap. I'm a good decade older than you. Mm-hmm. And so like, I'm curious, like what are the toys that you came up with and like, what's the first video game system you had? Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Cause like that shit probably just seems like yesterday for me.
The landmarks.
Yeah.
First video game system. I had just the PS1.
Mm.
That was the only one I ever had.
Mm. That came out when I was in high school.
Uh huh. I was really big on, Crash Team Racing.
Okay.
That was my shit. And the toys, which came earlier, I was super into the toys that were part of, like, you know, stories that existed on TV. So, like, Dragon Ball Z.
Okay.
That was like, a huge deal for me.
Major, yeah.
Yeah. And I was an X-Files nerd, too.
Okay.
So, like, I had, like, a Mulder toy and a Scully toy. And,
that's funny.
Yeah. They kind of like just chilled in the box on the side. I didn't really have too much fun with them, but
yeah. You're like, these are going to be a collector's item.
Yeah. Yeah. If I could think that far with the toys, I just remember being so feeling so free.
Yeah.
Feeling like I could be my vicious self. You know, there were parts of my personality and parts of everyone's personality that you could never share with, you know, daily.
Are you an only child?
No, I have a little sister.
How much younger?
She just turned 18.
Okay. Is she hot? I'm just kidding.
People, yeah, my friends joke about it, so I guess.
I'm just kidding. That's just a fucking reaction.
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what were the parents like? Were they always busy? Were you a latchkey kid?
What's that?
Oh, is that not a term for young people?
I've heard it.
A latchkey kid is like somebody where like your folks are busy at work and stuff, so you go home and like watch TV and shit on your own and like wait for them to get home late at night.
I was like that.
Yeah?
But I had, you know, sometimes they'd put me in like after school care, so.
Yeah.
I hated that stuff though. I always just wanted to be like, no, just let me go home, you know? I'll do my thing there. I don't need all these kids.
Yeah.
So my parents were really cool. They, you know, they weren't like overly busy. It's not like they ignored me or anything, but
Marin's a nice place to grow up.
It's the shit.
Yeah, so you guys are doing all right, and mm-hmm. and I feel like Marin is like a lot of open-minded people about like drug totally experimentation do. And stuff like yeah. that. Like, did you get into the drugs early?
Yeah.
And what did you start doing first?
Well, when I got to high school, I started smoking pot.
Yeah,
and that was what I did in high school.
Stoner kid.
I was a stoner kid.
I was a stoner kid too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, once I did shrooms when I was 16,
yeah,
which I wouldn't recommend for 16-year-olds who are like me, because my first trip got kind of freaky.
Yeah.
Well, I did it right. I got up at like 6 in the morning with all my homies, and it was like one of my
dedication.
Yeah. And it was one of their birthdays. And he just turned 16, and we were like, all right, like, let's wake up early on Saturday morning, and we'll eat them, and we'll hike up in the woods. And we weren't thinking right. It doesn't get light in the woods till like, noon.
Yeah.
So we're, like, kind of tripping balls in the woods.
In the dark.
In the dark.
Oof.
And it's cold, dude.
Oof.
It was in like, November.
Yeah. So
the worst thing when you're on drugs is being cold.
Yeah, it sucks. You're shivering and shit.
Yeah. And you just
hallucinogens definitely make you shiver too.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So it was great. I had a great time, but I got rocked.
Yeah.
You know? So after that, you know, like the next few
days, would you say it was a good trip or a bad trip?
I just remember in the very beginning, there was just a moment where I was like, oh,
yeah.
What if this or that? Or well, I don't remember what I thought.
Kind of freak out a little bit.
And then just the whole, I just felt like, you know, my throat, like just being sinking down all the way into my stomach. I just felt like just this pull downwards. And I was like, never felt that before. And that freaked me out. My friends were all like, whoa, dude, calm down. Like, it's all right.
Yeah.
And it was all good after that. But that, like, that had a lasting kind of echo.
Yeah.
But after that, man, I took all kinds of stuff and it's all been great.
There you go, kids. It's all been great. No, that's funny that you guys like planned that out and woke up at 6 a.m. I remember my first time doing mushrooms was very like on a whim. My friend was like, I was like probably 19 and he's just like, hey man, we got some mushrooms. You got $40. I'm like, let's go. Yeah. It is like 9 o'clock at night. And then, my first trip on mushrooms was terrible. It was, I had a very bad trip, but I had done other hallucinogens before and had good trips. So I was like, not worried about it. And I went in probably overconfident. And then I just had like a freak out moment. Cause I've probably told this before, but like we were in the backseat of a car, like heading to a party, and in the middle of a city intersection, my fucking friend like opens the back door of the car and starts vomiting. In the middle of an intersection. And I'm like, fuck man, we're like in downtown in a city. Like we're going to get pulled over. We're fucked, man. Oh, take me home. Like I couldn't hack it with shrooms on the first time. And I kept trying and trying. I never really had a good trip on shrooms, but I loved acid. I was an acid guy. Yeah. So are you still on a path of self-discovery? Are you still into the, like, learning about yourself via hallucinogens?
I learn from every time I do it.
Yeah.
I don't take them that often anymore.
Yeah.
And they never became anything I needed, but they became.
Yeah, I don't think anybody needs them. Yeah. It's more like you're either down to do it sometimes. Yeah. Like no one's like, yo, yeah, hi, I'm here in Narcotics Anonymous because I'm addicted to mushrooms. Like, I feel like, get the fuck out of here.
I know. The thing with shrooms is there's more kind of a body influence.
Yeah.
And that's kind of freaky. If you're not used to it.
Right.
But acid was always fucking dope, man.
It's very heady. Cool. It's very heady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very similar, but really cool.
Absolutely. Still smoke the weed?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Are you like a weed scientist? Like, do you need to know your indicas and sativas and all that shit? And like,
when I was in high school, I was proud of the distinction, my knowledge of which to smoke when.
Yeah.
But, now it's like, man, it's hard now because if I smoke like during the day or nowadays, I just vape usually because I sing and I don't want to damage anything anymore.
Mm.
But you get so washed, which, you know, just means like super tired, you know, and in the middle of the day, like I can't get out of that.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm a lightweight when it comes to like everything.
Yeah.
And I can't do it during the day anymore without, you know, crashing.
Right. But, without a good mid-afternoon nap.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Or just a lot of coffee.
Yeah, for sure.
But
yeah, I don't know. I actually quit like right around your age smoking weed. And it's one of those things where I was never able to like turn back. I don't know. Like sometimes I wish that I could just go back to smoking weed every day because it was like a good self-medication and it kept me pretty neutral.
Oh yeah.
But at the same time, once I quit, it's like now that I'm a fucking old man, I just get paranoid and shit.
Yeah.
That's got to be like the perfect environment for me to want to do it nowadays.
I feel you.
So what was the music environment like in your household? Was your dad into it? Was your mom into it?
My parents were, they loved music on some days, you know, they had a whole life of, you know, experiences, and they're very much nostalgic. My dad, he was always into like, you know, Bob Marley and Pink Floyd and, you know, Led Zeppelin. And he turned me on to AC/DC when I was really young, which was cool. Yeah. My dad was always just, you know, when we're partying, when we're having people over, you know, when it's a good time to play music, do that.
He's trying to crank up the AC/DC when you guys have a party. That's some white trash.
Some
shit.
Parties.
That is some white trash. I'm gonna tell you, in North Pole, Alaska, anytime that you are at a fucking bonfire party or a gravel pit party, you will always hear AC/DC raging from someone's truck. It's so funny. Yeah. It's like, it's a guarantee anyhow.
Yeah,
AC/DC, that's dope. What else?
Well, I remember when I got a guitar, my mom, God bless her, she was just like, well, if you're a guitar player now, you might as well listen to the greatest guitar player ever.
Joe Satriani. No?
Hendrix.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was close. No. Yeah. Yeah, Hendrix is dope.
Yeah, I remember the day she played that for me.
Did they have it on vinyl?
No, she just bought me like a greatest hit CD, you know. Dope. Just whatever was at Best Buy.
Yeah.
And that got me. At first I was like, you know, I listened to like radio stuff, and then I heard that and I was like, this is so weird.
Yeah.
But then you know, really listening, it was like, oh shit.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's some life
crazy.
I was lucky enough to like, it's really cheap in Alaska to live, like, as far as housing market back when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And so like we lucked out and got a fucking really dope house for really cheap, and it had this huge basement. And so my dad wanted it to kind of turn it into like a man cave of sorts. And so it's like 1,000 square foot basement, and he got a pool table down there, and he ended up getting a foosball table. We had darts and shit, like all kinds of stuff.
That's what's up, man.
Yeah, it was dope. But he had, an extensive vinyl collection down there, and like his working stereo from like the mid-70s probably. Mm-hmm. And so I remember my brother and I would just go down there sometimes. We're like 2.5 years in age mm-hmm. difference, but we'd go down and play pool, and we would just pick out random vinyls. But it was kind of like we would pick out stuff where maybe we knew the name, or we had heard of them before, or it was just by a cover. And so like one of the first records that like we really got into together was the Jimi Hendrix Experience, like mm-hmm. Are You Experienced or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, you know, with Purple Haze on it and fucking All on the Watchtower and all that shit. And it was like, that record holds a very dear place in my heart because we used to listen to it on vinyl. It sounds fucking amazing. You know what I'm saying? So how did that influence your guitar playing though?
Well, he was so much more than guitar for me too.
Mm-hmm.
He was like a producer and a singer, and he brought textures into music that were completely revolutionary and influential even today.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people were inspired by that even the music that I listened to on the radio unknowingly was completely influenced by that.
Absolutely.
You know? That was kind of like picking up a religious book in a way, and like, you know, understanding a source of life really. So his words and his, you know, when you read his words on paper, it's like, you know, that there's a whole nother side.
Yeah.
But he inspired me with his personality, I think, you know. His singing was almost like rapping on some parts, some songs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just all these big, big wails, like, wow, you know, like that stuff. And that has a specific purpose in music, and that, you know, that's to bring a personality. So he influenced that. I think with the guitar playing, just the very kind of warm and brightness. I think that explaining the sound is difficult, but I think that if you listen to my stuff or anyone else who's, you know, influenced by him, you can tell, because it is a color to it.
Do you see music in color?
I see music in a lot of different things. I see colors sometimes.
Yeah.
But
I've heard this phenomenon, like, and it happens to me, and I thought that I was just crazy as a kid, but I guess I've read that other people do it too, where like you hear, like if you close your eyes and listen to a song, you don't even have to close your eyes, you can like see different songs come into your head as different colors, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I've always judged like a good album by like if there are a lot of colors on it that work together. Like I don't like an album that just all sounds dark blue to me or something. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
It
needs to have like some ups and downs, like a roller coaster. Do you relate to that at all? Or do I just
Hell
have
yeah,
a crazy person? Yeah.
Of course, man. Word. Yeah. My favorite records, I think the most colorful record that I listen to now that is probably my favorite record is In Rainbows.
Mm.
And that record has so many colors.
The Radiohead joint?
Yeah.
Yeah. That fucking, man, I remember when that album came out, and I was working an office job, and like Everybody in our office was bumping that. It was crazy. That album didn't leave my rotation for probably like 2.5-3 months. Yeah. So good.
Dude, that's, you know, people nerd out on Radiohead. And
it's funny that you say Radiohead, because somebody was asking me today. I was chatting with my buddy online, and he's like, oh, who do you have on the podcast today? I said, I got this dude, Toy Light. Oh, who's that? And I said, it's kind of like this electronic dream pop singer, producer guy. It's kind of low endy, but I was like, it's kind of Radiohead-ish too, is what I told him. Yeah, and you pumped your fist as I said that. And yeah, I, what was it? Something Mansions. There was a
Mansions of Night.
Yeah, Mansions of Night. I was listening to that song. I sent it to him. And I said, doesn't this kind of sound like, you know, later Radiohead shit, like kind of experimental that way? And he's like, oh yeah, yeah. So that's cool. So Radiohead's a big influence.
Man, yeah, I've been in arguments with my friends about who's the best band ever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm always with them. But yeah, dude, they're so good. Everything.
It's been really cool how they've kind of like revolutionized the industry too.
Mm-hmm.
I heard this thing that as a musician, you only need 1,000 fans to survive, 1,000 hardcore fans to survive, meaning somebody that will buy the rare $70, you know, 7-inch that, you know, there's only 1,000 of them made, and they'll spend whatever amount of money to get it. Like if you have 1,000 of those type of fans, then you can always survive. And I feel like Radiohead has managed to make hundreds of thousands of those fans that will pay any fucking amount of money, and they've just been able to like bypass the music industry now, which is like, if you think about it, I feel like they set the blueprint for sites like Bandcamp and like, you know, donate your own, like they set that even like Louis C.K.'s comedy special where it's like, here, $5 and you can have it. Like that's kind of innate, like that's kind of like inherently inspired by what Radiohead originally did too.
Totally, dude.
Yeah.
You can tell what kind of person someone is by what music they make.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that I think a lot of people love their music so much because they do something that they do things that aren't conventional, you know, and, you know, life should not be conventional. And I think people like music that gives them a sense of, you know, someone's life. And like Tom York even said, like, you know, when they were recording Kid A in that era, he tried to like record all their mistakes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much, you know, inspired me in almost every way.
Yeah.
Because music got to a point when I started recording and stuff, you know, it took me a while to like get my ideas coherent, and then, you know, anything I did when I was really young, I never saw anything through. I didn't have a song in my head and then like make that song
until it sounded how you heard it in your head.
Yeah, I mean, right. When I started on a song, I would be like, oh, this sounds cool, and then I would jump off on something else, and just, you know, to have that persistence, to have that clear idea, that was a really important. That's really important now.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, let's talk about that. So you're an 11-year-old kid. You got a guitar. You start playing. You start jamming with your friend. And where does that end up? Like, where does that go? Like, does that last for a summer? Does that last for a couple of years? Do you guys like? Do you ever play a gig with him?
Yeah, yeah. We extended the band, and we got a bass player and a keyboard player, and we played. Yeah, we played gigs. We played, I think, mostly like. We played like art galleries and that.
At what age?
I was like 16, 17.
What kind of music would you say it was?
People said we sounded like Radiohead.
That's tight.
And like Nirvana and stuff. You know.
Were you singing in the band as well?
Yeah.
So you're playing guitar and singing at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. That's a talent.
Thanks.
That
dude.
Shit is hard.
It took a while.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when at that point, the sound that. I mean, the kind of guitar playing I was doing was like, you know, kind of Nirvana like.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes, like not big open chords, where like barred chords and like, you know, certain additional like hammers and, you know, just pretty simple.
Yeah.
You know, simple music. But the thing with our band was that our drummer was so good.
Yeah.
That we could, you know, the bass player and I and the keyboardist could just play, you know, the craziest shit. And the drum patterns would be so on.
Was it like he was like math rock drummer almost or something?
Dude, he was an athlete. Like, I don't – he listened to like The Who and like he nerded out on classics, you know, but he had so much energy and like any drummer should.
Yeah.
And he just like – he just kept us going, man. Nice. So that was – he was the
– So you guys stuck with it for a while. What was the band called?
Man, we had a weird name. If I could go back and change it, I would. But I just named it after this place that – I would go with my dad to like help him out with his like his work, and it was this place, this town called McKittrick.
So that was the name of the band, McKittrick?
McKittrick Pits.
McKittrick Pits. That's cool.
The pits were these tar pits.
Yeah.
We would go and spend like hours at these pools of tar where there's just hot, you know, gas and all this
like
shit.
Like what, digging up fossils and shit or something?
Just taking the tar, taking a sample of it and like driving back to the Bay Area. Huh. He would experiment on it for months. And it just, I mean, the place just has a real spookiness that never really left my, you know, my memory and everything. And that was the name of the band, McKittrick Pits.
That's tight. But so what was the demise of McKittrick Pits?
We all just went to college.
So it just kind of ended recently then?
Yeah, a couple years.
Yeah. But what are you, like a senior now? Or are you a junior?
Yeah, senior.
So yeah, it ended like three years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme, that's like yesterday. It ended yesterday.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah. that may seem like
feels
forever.
So long
that
ago.
Seems like forever for you, but that was just a little bit ago. Yeah. Do you guys keep in contact though?
I keep in contact. I keep in really close contact with the bass player / keyboard player. They would switch off. I'm close with them still. The drummer dude, he was an athlete. He had different plans. He was, you know, he went to some school in the Midwest, and you know, we're really cool and everything. We haven't talked.
Playing
much.
What, like football or something? What was he playing?
I don't know. Huh. He was super into baseball. You know, he was the baseball guy.
Yeah.
But
so you guys were more or less like. Here's the thing is that you guys became friends at 11, right?
Mm-hmm.
And playing drums and guitar. Mm-hmm. And you both became friends because of this like mutual goal.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you never really became like friends? It was always, even at 11, it was kind of like some business shit.
Well, when we were that young,
yeah,
he was definitely like one of my best friends. You know?
Yeah.
I was like, you know, we loved each other. And
but then a chick got in the way.
No, I mean, when in high school, like he took sports and stuff so seriously, and you know, I started, you know, skating and smoking and all this stuff, and we just had different lifestyles.
Yeah, but the music kept you guys together. Still,
it was always the music.
Yeah,
in high school, and
yeah,
he's a great guy
for sure.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to get you to talk shit.
Oh
about
no,
your friend.
Not at all. I just haven't thought about him in a while.
Yeah, well, it's funny because like I feel like everybody that I've collaborated with on music, it starts off kind of on some like being cool and being friends, and then the longer that you work together, the more like you start to realize music is the tie that binds, you know what I mean? And sometimes there's not much else other than that music.
You
know what
I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So is it when you get to college, is that when you really start experimenting with soundscapes on your own, or were you doing mm-hmm. that already in high school?
That was the first time I started recording.
When you got to college?
On my own. Yeah.
So you moved to LA, and like what happened? Did you go to Low End Theory or something?
Yeah, dude.
And was that was a big game changer?
As soon as I went there, I was like, all right, this is what's up.
What was the show that you went to?
I think the first time I went, I think I saw Toki Musta.
Okay.
Back then, she was like, you know, she was doing something that, you know, was just like, it was amazing to me. And, you know, she was very melodic and soulful and brought elements of the colors, you know, like very colorful, all the brain feeder stuff.
Yeah.
Huge fan. So that was the first time I went there and, you know, got hooked.
You start going often?
Oh yeah, dude. I've, you know, for the past, ever since then, going as often as I could, almost every week.
Maybe that's why you look familiar. Because when you walked in, I said, oh, hey, I feel like I've met you before.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that's why I go to Low End a lot too.
Uh-huh.
I don't really like pay that close attention to the acts anymore, which is a bad thing. I just go to kind of like be around and say hi to people and be friendly.
That's why it's so dope.
It's tight. It's a nice, it's a good community there. And it's uh-huh. a nice, like, I hate to say scene, but it is like, it's a cool little scene.
Totally.
And it's a nice place where I know like a lot of my friends will be every Wednesday, and I can go say hi to people after I've been done being a hermit for a while.
Maybe. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's dope. And you said you started interning for Kev?
Yeah. Yeah.
How long did that take before you were like, okay, I like this shit. Now I want to start interning.
I did the internship when I was a sophomore. So I was going to Low End Theory for like a year before that. And I saw the ad to, you know, that work that they're hiring.
Yeah.
And I felt like, hell yeah. Mm. I want to do that.
Yeah.
You know? So I did that spring, in the spring of sophomore year. So that was just over a year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that was awesome.
Good experience.
Dude, it was the shit. That like, I met so many amazing people.
Yeah.
You know, like my best friends now. My best friends now I met from that.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, I've always heard great things about the internship, breaking the fourth wall. If you guys out there listening ever are interested in interning for Alpha Pub, feel free to hit Kev up. I know that he's always looking for interns. And it's a cool experience. Everybody that I've talked to that's done it has always been like very appreciative of it. And a lot of people that like I've had on the podcast have interned for him and stuff. It's interesting. So after you see Toki Monsta at Low End Theory, like, do you go out and buy some gear? Do you bootleg some shit for the computer? Like, what do you do? How do you start like changing your musical landscape?
Well, I had the ideas, you know, I needed the gear and I needed to develop my skills, which took a long time. But, you know, I started out on GarageBand and then I jacked Logic and then my computer died after a month. So all the shit I made on Logic, it was a bunch of shit anyways, like wasn't any good, but I lost all that. So then I had to replace the hard drive and everything. And then I jacked Ableton and then I was like, this is crazy, you know, and it took me a long time to get you know, my ideas straight with that. But now I'm, you know, I bought it like a year ago and, you know, I'm on 9 now, and it's so sick.
I just bootlegged 9. I've been thinking about maybe teaching myself to use it. I'm proficient at Fruity Loops. I used to fuck around with making beats a lot, and I always felt like when I was making beats, I was like more creative with my raps, and I haven't done it in a couple of years, and so I'm like, maybe I should start making beats again. It's very intimidating to jump into a new program that you're not familiar with. How long did it take you to get comfortable with it?
Oh, man. Ableton. Whew. It was a bitch, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have anyone showing me stuff, so yeah. I just taught myself. But
there are a lot of YouTube tutorials.
There are. Yeah. I'm such an idiot about that.
Yeah.
I should do that more. But I think I mean the first stuff I made, you know, I was such a goof. I didn't know that you could like just like make a timeline song.
Yeah.
You know? All my first stuff were just like little live sessions that I recorded.
Oh, right.
So just
right.
Like, you know, triggering stuff. And so much of it was offbeat and, you know, that was all right at the time. But, you know, now it's like,
yeah,
keep
right.
that in the closet.
Right, right.
But that was when I started out. It took me about 2 years, maybe. I mean, I've been working on it since beginning of sophomore year, which was almost 3 years, two and a half.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's been a while. Not a whole lot, but I can make the sounds I want now.
So when did you start realizing that like, okay, sampling isn't going to be my shit. Like I want to do found noise. Like what was the idea for that?
Oh man, dude, that's the stuff that I dwell on, you know, because, music is life. I came to a realization like, you know, a while ago that everyday life and sounds that happen in your surroundings, in your room, are like more profound than you want to believe. So when you produce those things right, when you produce sounds that you're used to tuning out, when you produce them and you can like, you know, if you put enough effects on them, then they're obscured enough to sound like, you know, atmosphere or anything you want. But when you keep a certain rawness, like a certain, like a liveliness, you know, and like these sounds, like hardly anyone's really using them to the best, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, the people that really, really blow my mind now are like guys like Amon Tobin. He's the best producer in the world, in my opinion. You know, he takes sounds that are like completely alien, but they're very familiar. You know, they're daily sounds. Mm-hmm. He did one album that was just all like, you know, animals and machines and stuff like that. And that takes music to a completely new place. That takes music to a place that is experiential. And music should be that, mm-hmm. you know. I think music, you know, it's part of the evolution. I'm trying to just be more expressive of myself, because I think that everyone really deep down, we're not all that different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you take stuff that makes, you know, our experience, and you take that stuff and you translate it in a way, perhaps with an emotion behind it or a color, you know, you can really take someone out of their slumber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can really wake someone up. You can change someone.
Do you feel like you're more of a producer or a vocalist, or like, do you feel like your vocals are just part of the production?
I mean, it
sounds like you're really trying to create these really custom soundscapes, and you're very passionate about it. So, do you feel like you concentrate more on the sound than maybe the voice?
The goal is to have them blend,
yeah,
seamlessly and sound like they're supposed to be together. Uh-huh. You know, when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a singer.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't want someone else to make me a beat. You know, I don't need that. I know exactly what I want to make.
Yeah.
So it's both.
Right.
Definitely.
Do you put a lot of weight into your lyrics? And I say that, not that, that almost sounds disrespectful as a question. Do you put a lot of weight in your lyrics? But like, I'm going to keep it 100 right here. Like, when I listen to Radiohead, most of the time I don't understand what the fuck Thom Yorke is saying.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of listening, and it's the mood and the atmosphere that they're creating that makes the music so moving to mm-hmm. me, not necessarily what he's saying.
Right.
Do you relate to that at all? Like, do you
totally?
Like, yeah. It's less about what you say and more and how it sounds almost.
When I was young, I didn't care so much.
Yeah.
But you know, reading more now and becoming smarter and becoming a better listener, I think, is what makes anyone want to be better. You know, when you really hear something amazing. I mean, you know, hearing certain lyrics, hearing a certain combination of words that doesn't quite make sense, but it makes a lot of sense,
mm-hmm.
you know? So that stuff is what drove me to sing. You know, I didn't care so much in the beginning about what I said. Of course I had to say words, you know, so I would make up things to say, but not a whole lot of weight, but
yeah.
now I'm trying. But the way this girl was asking me the other day, she was like, "Oh, what are you doing?" I was like, "Oh, I'm writing lyrics. You know, it's like, this is the hardest part for me." And she was like, "Why is it so hard? Like, it's so easy. Like, I do it all the time." And I was like, "Okay. Like, maybe if you're like, you know, trying to tell a story like in a linear way, you know, like, I don't know. How often do you listen to music like that?"
Yeah.
It sounds the same every time.
Right.
Know?
Right.
I was telling her I like music with words that kind of appear out of thin air that you didn't hear before, maybe because you know it wasn't part of a linear sentence or whatever. I was telling her I like words and lyrics that are kind of like secret messages. You know, I like a song to be like a mystery, you know, that you have to like really like get into and discover words.
That's interesting. That's a cool take. It surprises me that you said earlier that you weren't that popular in high school, because I feel like chicks would have gone apeshit for you. Like, you talked so relaxed and you like fucking make music and like you say all this like fucking artsy fartsy shit. I feel like girls would just go crazy for that. You know, you're not a bad looking guy. You're a handsome man. Like that just surprises me that you're saying you weren't popular.
Well, I wasn't popular.
Now that you're in college, you gotta be killing the game. Am I right? An art major.
I was just so like weird and emo, dude. I don't know. I mean,
chicks love weird and emo.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah,
I mean, some go crazy, you know.
Yeah,
I've had, you know, crazy girlfriends, and you know, I've had girls. I've had to like, you know, turn down girls and stuff, but like that wasn't, you know, that sucks.
That's not your passion.
No, I hate that. You know, and when I know that, you know, someone's thinking about me, then, you know, unless I really, really like them.
Yeah. You freeze up. You awkward around the opposite sex?
Definitely not awkward.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I'm pretty comfortable, you know, but when I was a kid, it was hard to find, you know, I had this problem, you know. Okay. When I was a kid, like, all right, I need to be with a cute girl. You know, I love cute girls, but like all the cute girls are like so bitchy, you know, and like they're really judgmental and it's hard to keep their attention. You know, they're really good at making you feel like an idiot. And that's how I was when I was younger, you know. Really cool girls weren't like dolling up, you know, they didn't look super hot, you know, and like,
right,
which is unfortunate, man. That's
it's like that Venn diagram on, have you ever seen that online? The Venn diagram where it's like, it's three circles about chicks. I'm sorry, women that are listening. We aren't misogynists. We're just making light of a situation, but it's like three circles of a Venn diagram. And it's like, you've got good looking, smart, and emotionally stable, and it's like you can only pick two for any woman. They can only be good looking, smart, but they're going to be absolutely crazy, or they can be good looking and emotionally stable, but they're going to be dumb, or they're going to be fucking emotionally stable and smart but not good looking. Like you can never get the perfect trifecta. I've yet to meet that perfect trifecta.
Yeah, likewise, man.
Yeah, but I like smart, good looking girls, but emotionally stable is the least important for me. Hey, if you're crazy, I'm down.
Me too, man.
I like me a crazy bitch.
Yeah,
yeah.
Super Those are down. My favorites.
Yeah, super down, dude. the crazier, the better in bed, and the more fun it is. They keep you on your toes. I'll tell you what. You got a lady right now?
Nah, nothing serious.
Yeah, so ladies, you're going to see when you see this picture of him on kindofneat.net. It's a handsome man. You look like a fucking Abercrombie model, bro.
Oh, shit.
He's gonna be out here fucking cleaning up at Low End Theory after this shit. What are you currently working on? What projects have you put out? How about that? I'm not even that familiar.
Yeah. Stuff that I'm proud of.
Yeah,
is
sure.
Really only like one thing.
Which is?
That I just put out in June.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 5-song EP. Took me forever to make just because I wanted to share it. You know, like my previous stuff, I listened to it and I'm like, oh God, like I did that. Oh God, why'd I do that? But now this thing I designed for, you know, a specific purpose, and I'm still proud of it, which is somewhat surprising.
Yeah.
But that's called Sign of Life. Came out in June. Bandcamp. All the songs are on SoundCloud, so you can just stream it there. I took a while to do that. Right now I'm working on a new 3-song EP. My homie Paul, you know Paul?
Paul Preston. I don't know, maybe.
Okay, well, yeah, Peabody.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I know who Peabody is. I've not been officially introduced, but I'm familiar with who he is, yeah.
Yeah, he's starting a label called Tar.
Okay.
And he asked me to do...
He, like, DJs with... Azizi and those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen him around.
He's a super dope guy.
Cool.
Yeah, he loves my artwork and loves my music and stuff, so preparing 3-song for that. I make, like, a new song every week, so, you know, my plan right now is... I have ideas about what I'm going to do, but by the time it comes out, you know, it's probably going to be something totally different. But, you know, always working on new things. I think that lately, coming out of the thing I just made, Sign of Life, which I have a copy for you.
Oh, thanks,
physical
buddy.
One.
Yeah. You're the first person in 30-something episodes to bring me a gift.
Oh,
you're setting a precedent that now I'm going to bang on everybody. Like, you motherfuckers better bring me a gift. Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah, dude.
That's very tight. You did the artwork as well?
Of course.
Very abstract.
Even on the inside.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm down. Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Very welcome.
Now everybody that I ever invite on here.
It's going to have to step up.
Yeah, you guys better step your fucking shit up and bring me some presents. A song a week. That's a lot. And you're juggling school. Do you have a job?
Just apply to Guitar Center.
Nice.
See what happens.
What's the plan when you get out of school?
You know.
How are you going to keep a roof over your head? I'm concerned for you, Walker.
Are you?
Wow. How are you going to keep a song?
Oh, no, not
no,
this.
No, I'm just fucking with you. No, but for real, do you have a plan?
Kind of.
Yeah.
No, not really.
Yeah.
But people say that they're afraid of going home, and I'm not afraid of going home. I don't, you know, there's nothing wrong with going home. My parents are empty nesters now.
Yeah.
And, you know, since my sister and I moved out, they totally upgraded all the shit at home. Now there's like an outdoor spa. And it's like, oh God, you know, every time I go there, it's hard to come back.
Dude, you guys are a lucky generation too, because the fucking everything crumbled, like the economy crumbled right when you guys are at the right age, to where now it's like, oh yeah, oh, I'm 23, I'm 24, I'm going to go live at home because the economy's bad. Like, I missed that by a few years where it's like, I can't move back home in my 30s on some like, hey, the economy's bad, sorry guys, yeah, I got to come home. My mom would be like, motherfucker, you better get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I, you know, I'm down here struggling. But that's the thing is, like, I think the one thing that was good about art school is that it taught me that I can do a lot of different hustles, because like, creativity is creativity, and if you're creative in your hustles, you'll always keep a roof over your head, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
That's my plan, you know?
It's just a hustle.
Yeah, I don't plan on going home, but like, you know, that's tends to be the fear, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But yeah, my plan would be to, you know, I'm never going to stop hustling. You know, I'm a creative person. I do this because I don't know what else to do. I can't do anything else. I won't do anything else. You know, I have this whole photo thing, you know, I can... It's not my passion, but I have a, you know, an in there to work and shoot. I have all the equipment and all the skills. I've been educated, you know, and you know, with the art too. I think not like I'm gonna start like selling my artwork on the street or anything,
right?
But
you can always take design gigs and whatever.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, Guitar Center.
Yeah. We'll see. Guitar Center, bang.
Yeah.
That's the perfect fucking stoner musician lifestyle. Like, oh, yeah, dude, let's jam out. Oh, you can't play fucking Freebird here. Sorry, man. No Stairway to Heaven. Yeah, man. Well, fuck. Thanks for coming in, dude. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's, before we get out of here, tell the people where they can find you online.
Yeah.
Your Twitter is?
My Twitter is toy_light.
Toy Light. Spelled properly with an underscore in the middle.
Yeah.
You got a Facebook fan page?
I do.
What is it?
So, facebook.com/toylightmusic and Bandcamp. I'm on there. SoundCloud, Toy Light. Should be fairly easy to find.
Yeah. If you Google search Toy Light, the SoundCloud's the first thing that comes up. And like, the SoundCloud's legit. It's got a lot of great shit on it.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, absolutely. You got Instagram you want to shout out?
I do, yeah.
What's your Instagram, bro? We're very futuristic here.
Yeah, it's just at Toy Light.
At Toy Light.
Nothing, no tricks in there. Just
and then this episode is going to come out next week. So you're playing Low End soon, right?
Low End Theory, October 2nd with Lapalux.
So there you go. If you guys are in the LA area and you see his live performance, what song are you going to perform?
Today?
Yeah, tonight.
I'm going to perform two.
You're going to do two?
I cut both in half. So they're
a little mini mixtape. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. If you're familiar with my newest EP, Sign of Life, then I'm going to do Mansions of Night and Sacred Heart.
Okay, perfect. So if you see the video and you guys appreciate it, you can go see him in the Los Angeles area at Low End Theory on October 2nd. Is that what you said?
That's right.
October 2nd. So thank you so much for coming in, Walker. It was a pleasure to talk to you. You're very fucking soothing aura about you. Like, you're very relaxed and sage-like. Wise beyond your years, and your music is dope, and I think that great things are going to come from it. So thank you. My name is Lee. You guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. My man Ben back there in the hot room making the shit sound buttery is at IM Database, based with two S's. You can find both of us on Instagram with the same names. You can find us as a unit together at That's Kinda Neat on Twitter. And we got a new Facebook fan page for Kinda Neat. So you can go to facebook.com/kindaneat. YouTube channel, youtube.com/thatskindaneat. And of course, you can find everything wrapped up in a pretty package on kindaneat.net. That fucking plug keeps getting longer and longer and longer, and I apologize for it. I know you've already all tuned out at this point. Don't fucking forget to subscribe to us on iTunes or on Stitcher. And if you subscribe on iTunes, leave a 5-star rating and comment. Tell us who you want to see on the show. Tell me how handsome I am. Leave me a digital high five. With all that being said, thank you guys for tuning in. This was Kinda Neat.